Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. I think Josh and Gary might walk in at any moment, so you're going to have to just, like, we'll just throw on a microphone if he walks in. We're pretty laid back here on the Utah Puck Report. Special guest, a friend of mine, a hockey friend of mine who's been doing a lot for Utah hockey and is not a Utah guy, a Utah-born guy. You'll be able to know as soon as he starts speaking. George Chalice. Did I say it right, Chalice?
That's right.
Man, I've heard it pronounced like 30 different ways. When I first met you, I just knew you were George, and then everybody started saying your last name, and some people call you Chalice. Anyway, George, tell me where you're from.
Well, if my accent doesn't give it away, I'm a New York guy.
Yeah. What part of New York?
New York, New York. I was born in Queens and grew up out in Long Island, and I guess I can say I got to Utah as fast as I can. It only took me about 45 years to get here.
So you live here.
I do.
But you still work in New York, right?
I do. So my day job, if you can call it that, is I'm a practicing lawyer. I have an office in New York as well as Houston. But we practice in a very specialized area called maritime or admiralty law. So most of our work is in port cities around the United States, and most of our clients come from abroad because there's not that much in the way of ship owners and ship operators here in the States. So it's truly an international business. I travel a lot for it, and I wish I would have recognized it earlier, but to be in Salt Lake City, it couldn't be a better spot because I can launch out of the airport here and go West Coast, East Coast, Gulf Coast, up to Alaska, even out to Hawaii or American Samoa pretty easily.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that because I don't get to go anywhere, but that sounds like it's pretty awesome.
Sometimes.
Yeah. I know travel gets it sounds awesome until you're the guy that has to travel all the time, but.
Yeah, that's probably an understatement. I know that for a lot of people it sounds glamorous, and I guess going to neat places like Athens and Singapore would be really cool, but when you actually peel back the curtain and realize you've been flying all night, sitting straight up in a chair, and then you get off the plane to have a shower to go to work, do it 3 days straight, and get back on a plane and fly all night home again, it's not that great.
Yeah, a little wear and tear. So how did you end up in Utah?
So I married in 2010. I married a Texas girl. I brought her to New York for a short period of time, and that wasn't going to work for her, certainly not long term. So we compromised. We had come out here a few times. I had a little condo up in the Canyons Resort when it was the Canyons Resort. And we realized pretty quickly that this was a great spot to live. And then for me, I realized it was the best of all worlds. I can launch out of here from my day job. And amazingly, the first friends I made were through local hockey groups here in town. And I don't know exactly how the evolution occurred, but I got to town, and when we actually anchored up here, after the first week, you can ski every day and do winter sports activities outside, and then I was bored as all get out. So I said, let me go over to the rink and see what's going on. And I asked around, is there anybody looking for a guy, any men's groups that skate or adult groups that skate? And I was given a phone number of a guy who's subsequently passed away. Called Matt Brickley.
Oh, geez, yeah.
So I called
Matt. Our first guest.
Yeah,
he was our first guest on this show, yeah.
I'm not surprised. So I spoke to Matt. I told him I was a new guy in town, and he connected me with a bunch of different groups. And I was living up in Park City, so I got pretty quickly connected up there with some of the local hockey community. And here we are, like 10 years later.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you call Matt Brickley with your New York accent and the Boston accent, answers the phone, and he just hang up on you to send you away.
Oh, he was super welcoming.
Yeah, he's great. He really, we had him on. We made sure he was our first guest because of how much he's done for hockey. So did you grow up playing in New York?
I did. I grew up playing in New York out in Long Island, and then I went up. I played a little juniors for what was then known as the Junior Islanders. I went to college at the University of Vermont, and then I played a year over in Europe, or part of a year over in Europe, before I came back, and really was conflicted what to do. I had been offered the second assistant coaching job at Middlebury College, or I had a scholarship to law school at St. John's in New York City. So when I realized that the Middlebury College gig was paying $2,500 for the entire year with no health insurance, I kept thinking, my God, if I catch a puck off the head, I need two stitches. There goes the $2,500.
Yeah.
So I said, I think I better go to law school, and I did.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it worked out for you. Okay, so then you become a lawyer. You're involved in hockey. At some point, you end up owning a junior hockey team.
Yeah, the line's not that straight, of course. Okay. I was super conflicted about what to do, and There's been a couple of guys that I found to be really influential in my path, if you will. There's another Long Island guy called Jimmy Hughes. You probably heard of his, his boys. They're making a splash.
Yeah, they're doing all right.
Yeah, so Jimmy's a neighborhood guy. He his dad was a fireman in New York City, and he was like one of the first guys to get off Long Island to go play Division I hockey. He played up at Providence, and at the time I had this big decision to make. He was coaching at RPI, and I went up. I drove up. I spent the night at his place and said, Jimmy, you got to help me out here. What do I do? And he told me, he said, listen, why don't you just get your degree? You can always get back into coaching later on, but you may not be able to get back into the academics and get your degree under your belt. So I followed that advice for a while. And even during the next 3 years, during the law school period, I was still conflicted. And I really wasn't fitting in. I really didn't enjoy it at the time. And there was another guy who I'd worked with a couple of summers called Mike Cavanaugh. He's now the head coach at UConn. And what he told me was, yeah, you know, you get your career set first and use and abuse hockey until it starts using you, and then it's time to get out. And
that's good advice.
I've lived by it ever since.
Yeah, that's great advice. All right, so at some point, though, like, because when we started talking, you're telling, like, I meet you at the Park City Ice Rink, we're playing hockey together, and you're like, oh, yeah, I own a junior team in New York. And I'm like, yeah, you and everybody else, pal. Like, I didn't buy it for a second. Then I started talking to you more. I'm like, oh, this guy's legit.
Yeah, like, sort of.
Yeah, so you actually do. And then what – did you coach juniors first?
Yeah, so I'll tell you how it happened. So I go back to New York. I start law school. I was working at the ice rink. I was probably making $1,000 a week cash doing lessons in the morning before kids went to school. And then I got asked, would I take a 10U team? So I take the 10U team, and about halfway through the season, the president of the youth hockey organization said, hey, you're going to law school, aren't you? I said, yes, I am. And he said, why don't you join our board and you can conduct all our discipline hearings? I said, well, I don't really know how to do that, but I can try. And then I became like the headache man whenever there was a problem. So I sat on the board for 29 years, and I coached all different levels through youth hockey every season, right? Even after I got out of law school and was practicing. I then coached at the junior level. We at the time, we had a team that was in what was known as the Metropolitan Hockey League. Then we joined, that went defunct, and we went to the Atlantic Junior Hockey League. And most of those teams have now morphed into what's known as the Eastern Hockey League. So I did that for a bunch of years. And then ultimately, I had no interest in doing anything other than just coaching and being involved as an administrator. But our organization, I was the longest sitting board member through five presidents. And the last of the five presidents decided that he had a couple of sons that were in the organization that were AAA or bust. They weren't AAA. They were probably not even AA, but they were AAA or bust. And to remove some of the confusion about where the direction of the organization was going to be going, he was ready to flush the Tier 2s and the Tier 3 program right out of the gate. So I made a deal. I took over the Tier 2 program and the Tier 3 program and then tried to put back together what we previously had, which was a vertical integration from Learn to Play, you know, House League, Learn to Play, through Tier 2, Tier 3, travel hockey. And then we went and acquired what's now known as the Long Beach Sharks NA3HL team.
Okay.
And so I've owned the youth hockey group for, this will be our 11th or 12th season. I keep getting confused, and this will be our 7th year with the juniors.
Wow. All right. And now, and we've got some personal connection with your Sharks, because we had Daniel played there. Sam played there. Yep.
Yeah.
Sam played there. Have you had other Utah players?
Yeah. So actually, when we first took it over, we made a decision, right? The NA3HL is a very good league. It's run really, really well. And in theory, it's supposed to be a feeder league to the NAHL.
Right.
The NAHL East Division was in its infancy when the time we came in. And what we were trying to do is we were trying to build a young team where we can get guys in and we can showcase them and then hopefully move them up and out before they aged out. So the first of the Utah players to come through our organization was a Sam, but not Sam Brickley. It was Sam Willis from Heber.
Oh, yeah.
He came in as a 15-year-old turning 16. He had a great season, and then I think he decided that he was going to focus on academics and not athletics. And I think after that one season, he moved on to other pastimes and hobbies.
Okay.
Subsequent to that, we had Sam Brickley come for a year. He played with us. He's now playing for me at the U. I'm the associate coach at the University of Utah men's M1 program. Then after Sam, we had Walker Montgomery, who's also a Salt Lake kid, come out. He's still with us. He's in his second year with us. Tyler Fisher is in his second year.
Yeah.
Gabe Hopkins is a Park City kid. He's with us in his first year. And Colton McIntyre is with us. He's also a Park City kid. I coached with a guy called Jack Skelly. I coached the high school team up in Park City last year. And both Gabe and Colton came play for us in New York this year.
What a huge resource to have a guy like Jack Skelly just hanging around.
Like, yeah, well, there's good news to report. Jack's on his way back to town, and he's got a Christmas clinic coming up on the 26th and 27th of December up in Park City, and then he's got some pretty big plans for spring and summer programming around here, so
yeah,
stay tuned.
He's done some really good things, and we'll see. Josh is pretty good. Josh is the brains behind the program, our producer. He's pretty good at finding, like, the web links and stuff like that. For we'll try to figure out what Skelly's got going on. But
yeah, I don't think he's undercover. I think it's jackskelly.com.
That makes it easy.
Yeah, super simple.
So yeah, we'd love to find out more about that. And I know Jack was working because you know Jordan Preezy's a frequent co-host on this show. He moved to Seattle, but he's actually moving back to Salt Lake now. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell people that, but anyway, Jordan's coming back.
I've heard.
Yeah, Jordan's coming back and. And I know those two team up and do like some phenomenal camps for kids around here and really help, like, from goaltenders to, you know, defensemen. And anyway, so that's what's good for them. And Jack's helped you get some players, and you've worked that way. But now you get involved with – first off, before I move on to the University of Utah, I've always wondered, because all I see from people that own clubs, whether it's the Ogden Mustangs or – and I, you know – I coached with the Mustangs, and I've seen NA3 teams before. What I see from the owners of those clubs is nothing but sacrifice. Because to me, it looks like you give and give and give, and I don't see, like, you're not making money off this. This isn't a cash cow for you.
No, no chance. Actually, it's a huge time commitment, even though I'm not physically there day to day.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone every day, 7 days a week, all season long, and most days in the off season, whether it's being on the recruiting trail in the spring and summer, organizing things for our team during the course of the season. It's a huge time investment. It's a huge money investment. One of the things that we struggle with being in the New York City metro area is we don't have the benefit of anything quote-unquote cheap.
Right.
Like if you were in a small town where you might be the big show in town, you can get a gate. People will pay to come watch the game. Well, we have to compete with, like, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils,
yeah,
and all their minor
yeah
league teams, plus part of the year basketball, part of the year baseball, and most of the year football as well, right? So, like, no one's coming to pay to see our junior program play. And for these players to come and live, we don't have an abundance of housing and space for people to come. So we've made a commitment and have acquired not one, not two, but three separate houses where we have them chaperoned for the players.
Wow.
And then for the younger guys that we bring in, we have families that they can bill it with as well. And again, that's a constant line of communication because for many of these kids, it's the first time being away from home, right?
Right.
And so you think it's so simple. Oh, so-and-so is a great hockey player who's going to go to New York next year. Well, about 2 weeks into it, they're really missing home, and the girlfriend's calling, the mom's calling, right? You never know what's going on, but we try to keep in good contact with everybody. And that's both on the hockey side, but also the personal side and the families.
Right, yeah. It's nonstop sacrifice. So I was just – when you were telling me about it, and then as you come in here, you tell me now you own a second junior club.
Well, yeah, we do. We do. It's sort of a bridge ownership deal. There's a team that had gone defunct called the Skyland Kings. A good friend called Kevin Cunningham, he's coaching, was coaching in Danbury at the time. He had taken a decision to leave Danbury, and he was intent on purchasing the defunct Skylands program. At the time, all the pieces of the puzzle didn't fall together. We talked and basically We acquired it until he's ready to take it over. He runs it day to day. He does everything soup to nuts, and he's done a really terrific job. In fact, he's second in our division right now, and I'm really blessed to have a friend in Kevin. He's a really great hockey guy.
Oh, nice. But still, again, just more sacrifice on your part and crazy. And now you're coaching. Now let's get to – I want to talk more about Utah hockey. I wanted to kind of lay the groundwork on how busy you are and how much stuff you have going. But now you're in Salt Lake. You're coaching U14s?
Yeah, up in Park City, I've got the 14U travel team.
Yeah.
And I guess I'd say most of my coaching time is dedicated to the University of Utah.
Okay, perfect. So we're talking more about I want to, Gary's in the studio now. Hi, Gary.
Hi there.
And we just want to talk more about, you're telling me something about your junior program in New York. Tell me what you just were.
Well, look, I mean, we did it. You were talking before about sacrifice and being a labor of love, and that's for sure. But for us, it was really important that we were able to provide a pathway for the youth hockey players in our organization and outside of our organization to go to the next step. And the intermediate step of becoming a college athlete is junior hockey, at least on the men's side of the game.
Right.
And so from our perspective, a statistic we're super, super proud of is that we haven't had a single player that – has been with us and aged out with us. I mean, there's lots of guys we've moved up and out before they age out, but players that have stuck with us through their 20U season, there hasn't been a single player that we haven't found a college team for.
Wow.
And it ranges, of course, in quality of the college programs that they go to, but all of them are going to be college athletes for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And for us, that's really important. For our families, I think that's really important because of the life lessons that these kids come away with at the end of that journey.
Yeah, for sure. And another part to that, and I was just talking about this the other day, I would not have gone to college if I couldn't play hockey. Like, I was a DJ at a fancy radio station here in Salt Lake that I thought was the neatest thing in the world. I was making decent money, but I knew I wanted to play. Yeah, it was... Nothing wrong with doing it for a living, Gary. But I thought that was my path. But I was like so obsessed with hockey that they're like, hey, what? There's this little junior college out in the middle of nowhere, North Dakota, and they have their own rink, which to me, like being from Utah where you skate once a week and play a game once a week, they're like, we practice every day. And if you come play hockey here, you can go to school for free. And I said, you said play hockey? And they're like, yeah, but you got to go to school. And I'm like, how much school? Like, just basically what I'm doing in high school, same thing. And they're like, yeah, just come to. And I'm like, I'm in.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, you got to pass all your classes and you got to do. And I'm like, what? I feel like I got bamboozled here. It's like, it's those programs, the junior programs, the junior college programs that were available back then, because that was actually the NJCAA back then. Those really do provide a pathway for people to get their act together.
Oh, for sure. Although I would say things have changed. There's a lot of focus on academics nowadays.
Yeah.
Right.
Amazing statistic, even though only one of the guys is a Utah guy, we've got five kids playing college hockey right now in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
I've got Sam Brickley, who's a local guy here from Sandy's, playing at the U. We've got a college another guy from Colorado called Evan Richards playing at the U on the M1 team. We've got a player from Texas, from Austin, Texas. The player's name, strangely, is also named Austin. Austin Simakowski.
That's awesome.
Playing on the M2 team. And we've got the Molyneux twins playing up at Utah State and Logan. They're originally from Wasilla, Alaska. Came to Utah State via New York.
Yeah. Are you kind of proud of those kids? You get a little. Now you got to play against those guys.
Yeah, well, our M2 team plays against Utah State.
Yeah, I guess
State.
You don't coach the M2 team.
No,
so,
you know, it's kind
of... You're proud of them, but you're also like, you're on the enemy.
Super proud. They haven't been down here and playing in town that I haven't gone and watched them.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, they're really good guys, good family.
We talked earlier with the president of the Utah Grizzlies, the Growlin' Grizzlies Booster Club, and she was talking about how you get to know the players, and you got, you know, then you're like a substitute parent for them. And I can't imagine running a junior program. You're a substitute parent for 22 kids or 25. What do you guys carry, 20 or 20?
Well, so you can have quite a bit more than that. We don't want to keep too many guys around.
Plus, New York's expensive to keep guys around in.
Yeah, well, it's also they're paying. It's a pay-to-play league, so don't want to take too many players that are going to be in their suits in the stands.
Yeah.
We keep around 25.
Okay.
And that's primarily because we have four goaltenders. One guy is a practice guy. The other three battle for the net. We have a couple extra skaters, a few younger guys that are primarily there for development. We have them figured in our plans next year and beyond.
Oh, cool. Tell your practice goalie I say hi. I've been there. All right, so now let's talk a little bit more. Now you're coaching 14 year here, and Gary, what ages are your kids in?
12U and 16U.
And they're
junior Grizzlies.
Grizzlies,
yeah.
So that's telling you, I knew Gary had kids involved. Anyway, you got the Park City team going. You got the stuff going in Park City. But let's talk a little bit more about what's going on with the University of Utah. How did you get involved with that?
Well, I think by a little bit of luck and a little bit of happenstance, I know that they were searching for a coach.
Yeah.
I know Morgan Feeney for pretty much since I got to town. He was applying for the job. He ultimately, amongst many qualified candidates, was selected to be the next head coach for the University of Utah. He and I are good friends, and he asked if I wanted to get involved, and I was super honored to get asked, and I've been really grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah. How do you have so much time? Like, you, people ask me that all the time, but man, you're like running.
I don't know. I don't sleep very much.
you wouldn't be able to. I mean, you've got a lot of stuff going on.
I know. I'm helping out with one of my son's teams, and whew,
yeah,
it's a lot.
I got asked twice this year to coach, and I just keep saying I can't, and I don't want to, and I can't. I don't know how. I just don't have the bandwidth anymore, and you just keep seeming to. It's like 24. Remember the old TV show 24?
Sure.
And then they'd call and be like, Chloe, you got to expand the parameters.
Yeah.
And George keeps just expanding his bandwidth to take on more and more on your plate. You just seem to be so generous with everything that you're doing.
Selfishly, it keeps me sane. I really enjoy going to the rink. I really enjoy being around both the kids and the game. And I don't know what else I would do with my time, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you find a way. Make it happen.
Yeah. Have you seen a movie? Like, have you, do you get out ever? You do some stuff?
Yeah, I see movies on planes. And remember, I have to travel quite a bit for work.
I think
I watched Maverick Top Gun about 5 times going back and forth to New York.
Yeah, that's not bad. So what kind of things are you, what's the goal with the University of Utah? You got some, you seem to twinker, try to tinker?
Really?
Tinker. Well, yeah. I can tell you my personal goal, right? My personal goal now is on Sunday I'm flying to Blaine, Minnesota.
Yeah.
It'll be the end of the NAPHL showcase, and it'll be just the start of the NA3HL showcase. So I'm going to go out there and watch an awful lot of hockey this weekend through next Tuesday or Wednesday, and hopefully we'll find some guys that will help improve our team going down the road. The NAPHL guys are a little bit younger, so they'll be on our radar down the road. Some of the NA3 guys could probably jump in pretty quickly. Certainly the age-out guys we'd be focused on for an immediate shot in the arm for our team, but maybe some of the 03 and 04 guys that could be in our plans down the road.
Yeah. At the Blaine Supercenter?
Yeah.
That's such a great place to watch hockey. I mean, that's
such a good, I unless love they that put place. You on that rink number 8, that's a long way to walk.
Yeah. It's a great place. Okay, so you keep building and you're making your team better. Are you like behind the scenes? Are you trying to make the jump from ACHA to NCAA?
Well,
or are you not allowed to say anything?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's an awful lot of ambition about that, and I certainly will do my part when I'm asked to.
Okay.
But at the moment, I think there's a lot of moving parts that some of which I'm privy to, some of which I'm not.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it's fair to say that if you were to look at the Pac-12, generally speaking, there's a real desire to try and create some kind of NCAA programming. You see what's happening down in Arizona. You see what's happening in Las Vegas. I don't know if I would say they had a great deal of success when they played those exhibition games against the NCAA D1 programs. But then again, I look in my own backyard in New York, I look at the Long Island University team.
Yeah.
And they came on the scene, and they were pretty terrible the first year, but they seem to be getting traction now.
Yeah. That's Garrett Metcalf's team. He was the first.
He was.
Yeah, that was his first season. That was their first season and his last season.
He was. He was, yeah.
Yeah, that worked out nice for us, as Utah people, them to go. And it was good that they weren't good because it got to showcase Garrett a little bit.
Well, it sure did. That's 1,000% for sure. I think that at one time, though, that program was pretty keen to build their own arena on their campus, and they have a beautiful campus on the North Shore of Long Island.
Yeah.
They're playing, at least for the moment, at the newest rink in the area, but I'm not – it's the Islanders' practice facility.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's conducive for college hockey.
Yeah, it seems
too far for the kids to come. You don't get that. I mean, one of the things I remember from being at Vermont is that you'd pack the house with students, and the student section would be berserk, and local people would be there's no other pro sport in the whole state, so
right.
It'd be a great fan base, and it was kind of a neat experience.
Yeah, and you talk about the Pac-12 thing going on, and I know it's happened with Arizona State, and it's funny now they're the home rink for the Phoenix Coyotes,
for
Arizona Coyotes, whatever we're calling them these days, and they have now what we already have. They've been working towards, but what we already have because of the Olympics. We have two universities here with rinks on campus that could easily facilitate NCAA at what their requirements. Isn't the requirement 3,000? Like, it's a low requirement, right? 2,500 capacity. Like, that's your minimum, but like, we already have that. We have that at Utah, and we have that at Weber State. They're already ready to go. And Utah State, right? No, that's not on campus. That's the difference.
No, it's not on campus, but it's a spectacular rink.
Yeah. Oh, phenomenal. Like, I love that place. But that's just the difference, is that typically they look for them to be on campus. And,
right.
And so I know that the push is there. And it seemed to me, when you and I were talking, I was talking to AJ, and it seemed like there was a lot of pieces falling into place. And especially around, because Oregon's trying to make the push.
Yeah,
big time. USC is trying to make the push. And maybe Stanford's trying to make the push to NCAA. There's another school. I can't remember which one it is. But there's schools here that are trying to make the push.
Yeah,
for sure. And then you already have all of them in Colorado. A ton of NCAA Division I programs in Colorado. So it just seems like you might be a huge part of the piece that could help us.
Well, if we go in that direction, I sure would like to be part of it.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been saying since I got here, that we have spectacular facilities.
Yeah.
And we have spectacular amount of ice at really reasonable pricing. Now, I know it may not seem that way.
Right.
Because I hear the complaints, oh, my God, the ice is so expensive. Oh, my God. It's so far to drive. But the reality is it's not.
Yeah.
Everything is right here in our backyard. And I hope, I don't know if it'll be me, I don't think it will, but maybe it will. I really would hope that somebody in our local hockey community would take the bull by the horns and start making Salt Lake City a destination for hockey. I mean, to me, I find it amazing that we've got some of our top-level players leaving here to go to places that are non-traditional hockey markets, like Arizona and Las Vegas. Why aren't we that destination?
That's a good point. That's kind of like the whole theme behind this show is a lot of times we have – every coach we have on here, we sing the same song. And we have a AAA program here now that's trying to do that. And every time they make steps forward, somebody else bad-mouths them or whatever. You get uninformed people that want to – well, we can't build this. We're not going to send our kids here because we'll just send them to Colorado or we'll just send them to Arizona. And people realize that and they come and – start barking in other parents' ears and, oh, that program's not good. And like you're talking about with Long Beach or with Long Island, you're not good for a year, big deal. You're not good for a couple of years, big deal.
Yeah.
You're paying your dues, and if people would stay here and we start, like you say, building that program from the bottom up, maybe we can build like what you had there, you know?
Sure.
You put the team together, people start staying here, and instead of bad-mouthing AAA because their kid didn't make it, you know, build the program, make it better. Let's keep kids here. Let's realize, okay, my kid didn't make it, but I'm not going to verbally tear down or go behind and try to destroy what's going on. There seems to be a lot of that.
Yeah, for me, I find it amazing. Like, there's not a single parent that would take their children and jump them from school to school on their academic side, right? Every year they jump to a different school because of some reason. But in the hockey world, it's quite prevalent. People go to one organization for 1 year, and then they go to a different organization the next year, and then year three they go to get a third place. How do they expect them to develop?
I don't know.
If we're talking about their math class or their science class, they'd never do that.
Right.
No, they wouldn't. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's a great analogy with the schools. It's the same thing. You're trying to teach. You're trying to build. And if they have time to learn, like a lot of these – the stuff that's put into the AAA program, when you step back and look at it, the AAA program we have here, when you step back and look at the pieces that are in place there, like with Evan Stofflet and Kevin McCloskey, like a freaking Edmonton Oiler, Stanley Cup winner that played with Wayne Gretzky, that they say scored one of the most important goals in the history of the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that you want your kid to be around. And players that have figured it out and gone through all the ranks, and yeah, it's different than having me and Gary coach, right?
Or like, me.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want that.
Yeah.
Me, you don't want me in there.
Well, I am 100% sure if we had a united approach as a state, as a USA Hockey affiliate, where we had one best team of all our best players stratified by birth years, we would be super competitive nationally.
Yeah.
We've got tremendous, tremendous amount of athleticism in this state. I mean, at the U, we've got a couple guys on the team that come from, their pedigree is, you know, Olympian parents.
Right.
In Park City, in our youth hockey program, I can't tell you how many of the kids come from that same type of pedigree.
Yeah.
Now, whether they make that commitment to hockey is a different question, but they certainly have athleticism and the family resources to commit to training for a sport. They know what to do, right? It's not like they're just coming at it the first time and don't know what it takes to be good at a sport, right? They don't know what the sacrifice mm-hmm. and dedication is. They do know.
Right. No, but, and that's funny. I mean, it comes up on this episode, on these, our show time and time again. Like, we talk about the same thing all the time. We've been talking about it since, like, when I first started playing hockey, there was one team. And, like, the next year, there were two teams, and then those two teams stayed around for a while, and it came down to one parent didn't. They had money, and their kid wasn't good enough to be on the team, so they just started their own program.
That's not unique to Utah. That's
everywhere. No, I know. Yeah. I know, and that's for sure. We've got to find a way to fix it.
Well, I have ideas on that, right? And one of the things we do in our youth hockey organization, we have no parent head coaches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that takes away the lightning rod of, if a kid makes the team, is the kid making the team because of his or her ability? It's an independent evaluator at the tryouts.
Right.
We often have tryouts by committee where we'll have two or three coaches that are evaluating each age group. And I think if we had something like that here where we had non-parent head coaches with an evaluation committee and a true commitment to a trickle-down approach where your top kids play in your AAA, your next set of kids play in your AA, and then your next set of kids play in your single-A, and then everybody else plays in a house league or a rec league. I mean, that's one of the things I thought was a little bit strange about the way that the affiliate here sets it up. Our house league players, and I know this because I've been a two-term board member up in Park City, our house league players play in the URL, what was then known as the URL, and they have to drive like 3 hours out to Vernal for a couple of games and 3 hours up to Logan for a couple of games. These are rec league players. I mean, wouldn't they be better off, instead of spending that 6 or 8 hours going back and forth to these faraway destinations, getting 8 hours of ice and skating right just home locally and playing in their own rink?
Oh, for sure.
Like a house league, I think, would be spectacular. And I think that's a piece that I think there's some of it here in town, at least in Salt Lake City, but I think that that may be the next area of focus to build that base of players.
Yeah, I agree. And we do have phenomenal players coming out of Utah.
Oh, yeah.
And we keep, like, you know, we've had more players in the NCAA, men and women, in the past, like, 10 years than we did all the years combined up to that. I mean, we'd have two or three or, like, one or two at a time. And then all of a sudden we had 10 and 15 athletes that were just exploding. And it was... And right now, we just had more. I just saw another woman commit to playing NCAA, and it's been phenomenal. It's the amount of talent that we have in this state is is enough to propel us to be a destination.
Yeah.
We just need to keep it. We need to fine tune all that stuff and make it work.
The women's side of the game is booming.
Yeah.
And I think that for the ladies in town here, I know certainly at the younger age groups, there's a lot of co-ed teams, but as they get up to 16 and 18 year olds or 19U as the designation is on the women's side, I think there's a lot of opportunities for those gals to become college athletes and hopefully go to school on scholarship.
I saw the statistics the other day that it talked about if you are in this sport and you're male or female, the percentages of scholarships that are out there based on registered players. And it's like hockey for women was almost like 25%. So 25% of the girls at age 18 have the opportunity to get a scholarship to play NCAA hockey, Division I, II, or III, whatever. The only thing that was higher than that was lacrosse and golf. And those were in the high 30s.
Wow.
Yes. And then on the men's side, it's always like 1 to 3 to 5%, right? Like it's
low. Super low.
Yeah, super low.
Super low.
Yeah. My 12-year-old, his 12U team, we have two girls on the team, and they're like two of the best players on the team. And we had a little skills practice, and they had like fastest skater, and they were both 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's
awesome.
That's a great age group, 12U and 14U. I can't say that I know the science behind it, but my experience has been in those co-ed teams, the girls are often more aggressive than the boys.
Totally, yeah.
And more effective out there.
Yeah, yeah, they're fantastic.
We just named on our 14U team, 14U travel team up in Park City, our captain, and it's one of the ladies, and she's dynamite.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great.
The opportunities are there, and I think, you know, we're lucky to have people like you come in, and the amount of sacrifice and I almost want to call it charitable work you're doing for us in Utah, and bringing your experience and helping us out, and hopefully having people like you behind the scenes and on the bench can help right the ship a little bit. We're on our way. I think we're on our way to making good changes, but I think the more people we have with clear sight like you, I think would really help us out.
Yeah. I think we've got so much to be proud of here in Utah. I think the future is super bright, and I think when we finally get this thing organized in a way where you could have the players playing with the right players on their team, right? Mm-hmm. Where you don't have a mixed bag where you have one great line in every organization, then the drop-off is a cliff, but rather you've got three great lines on your top team, and then you've got three great lines at the next level, and then you've got three great lines at your third level. I think that Utah will very quickly become recognized as, what do we call it, the state of sport?
Yeah.
So we can call ourselves the state of hockey. We start putting guys out of here to the USHL and North American League and on to college scholarships and pro rosters.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'd love to watch it happen. Again, what else are we missing, man? Like, I feel like we went through an entire hour, and I still feel like there's so much more to your story.
Well, that's pretty much my story. It's pretty simple. I'm a 51-year-old rink rat still.
And do you still get time to play?
Well, I do. There's a group of old-timers. We get together a couple mornings a week down at Steiner. We go out there and think we're playing for the cup, but really we just thanking God we don't have heart attacks by 7 a.m. and get in the shower and go to work.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Nice. Yeah,
that's not bad. That's the same thing I'm getting nowadays. It's just the afternoon skates.
I try to go. It's a little difficult during the season because I've got to find some hours to do actually some law work. But
you got to pay the bills.
Yeah, for sure. But I try to get it. There's a couple of good pickup games that go around town. I try to get out as often as possible. But again, it's not for any great level of competition, but rather just for fun and the camaraderie. What better is it than just hanging out with the guys in the dressing room for a couple minutes after the game, right?
Yep.
Talking crazy talk.
Yeah, exactly. I love the camaraderie. It really is one of the best parts of hockey. And I don't know. It's my cardio. It's all I do. I'm not going to run.
It.
I'm not going to run.
Yep.
And I'm not going to spin class anymore either. I finally put my foot down.
Smart, good man. Way to go.
Even though my wife was a spin instructor for 15 years or whatever, I had to finally just say, yeah, you can just count me out. Like, I'll skate or I won't get cardio. So with the, with your men's M1 team, and I've seen them play, and I've got to see. I haven't seen much this year, which is crazy because I don't know if you know, KSL Sports is streaming University of Utah men's hockey.
Yeah,
we're men's and women's. We're doing M1. Some games do M2, and we all have all the women's games too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the broadcast is spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, top notch.
Oh, yeah, they've got a great setup when they're home here at Steiner Rink. The men's M1 team is doing really well. The M2 team is doing really well. They're really strong this year. And the women's team, that's under the guidance of Braden Yao. And she's done an unbelievable job. And she's a really great coach, and the girls really love her. And she's super good for Utah hockey. Her and her assistant Rodney are really, really good.
Yeah, they seem to be making a lot of one of the former players was going to be a co-host today. We were going to have Brooke out here today.
All right.
But she got a little sick and wasn't able to make it out. She just graduated the U.
Just graduated last year.
She just finished the nursing program like 2 weeks ago. Brooke Burns.
Yeah.
I guess I should say her whole name. But anyway, she was a captain for the team. And it's just funny because her dad's been a teammate or played against him my entire life. So she's just been around the rink. We just watched her grow up. And now she's just this, she's a nurse. And then we went and watched her play hockey. And it's just been cool. So it's fun to watch these programs and the stuff they're doing and the people that are coming out of them. And I tell people all the time, and I think you'll maybe agree with me or not, but the ACHA D1 to me is similar, really similar to NCAA Division III, to the point where I think there'd be really competitive games. And a lot of the schools that are ACHA D1 are about a fifth the cost.
So for our program, there's not a doubt in my mind, our top team, when we have everybody going and healthy, we would be a very, very competitive NCAA D3 program.
Yeah.
For sure, there's no doubt about it in my mind. We have a bunch of guys that have played D3 hockey and have come back to Utah for various reasons on our team now. We've got guys that we're recruiting that we're recruiting up against D3 offers to go play. There's no scholarships at NCAA D3, but there's certainly players that have opportunities to go to any kind of school that they'd like to play hockey, but they choose to come to the U because it's such a great place.
Do you guys still have Chey Landakusik? Is he still playing or no?
Yeah, we sure do. He's a
phenomenal player.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that could probably play at any school he would have liked to.
Yeah, I think he had offers. I think he had opportunities anyway.
Yeah, I've heard anecdotally that he may have been Lake State bound, which is NCAA D1.
Yeah.
But we're lucky to have him. He's a real great guy. He's a character guy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And
character's a good way to describe him.
Yeah, he's a funny guy too, but in an understated way.
Yeah, yeah, he's fun.
I've seen some of his social media. It's a little crazy.
Speaking of that, just to throw this out there, when you're looking at a player, do you go and look at his social media? If you're looking to recruit a player, do you ever go on and do a little research?
I do, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, for me, it's really important to look at what the player does on the ice. Statistics, it's a lazy way to recruit, right? I mean, you can play in a division where you can have a 5-point night, and that doesn't really mean you're a 5-point a game guy, right?
Right.
So we really look at the whole package. We look at, for me, the compete level is really important. Playing away from the puck is super important. And basically what the whole player, right? What's the package we're going to get? What are we getting in the way of family? Is it going to be some player that's on his own, which is sometimes important to know, or is it going to be someone that's supported by his family that really wants to see them succeed? And again, there's no formula to what the right fit is, but we want to know as much as we can before we go further with the conversation.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's both at the junior level and at the college level.
Yeah,
I mean at the junior level, we get a lot of interest from players that we're unsure about, and sometimes we take a chance and sometimes we don't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you're right. There is no magic formula. There's no way to look at somebody. I remember I've had the opportunity when JP Parisi was coaching in the USHL, and I'd have the opportunity to not, I wouldn't say I was helping him. Maybe I was holding papers for him or something. Like, but I'd be in the room while he was making decisions or trying to figure out players. And especially on goalies, he'd look back and he'd be like, all right, this goalie's got a 95% save average. I want to see every score of every game he was in last year.
Yeah.
And I want to see if he was in, I don't, if his team's blown out schools 5-1 or whatever, he's like, I don't want to see, I don't, I'm not going to take a goalie like that. I want to see a guy that's in 2-1 games all the time or 1-0 games all the time. I want to see pressure performers. Like goalies that games, whether they're losing games 5-1 or winning games 5-1, because it's easy to be a goalie in a game that you lost 5-1. I mean, it sucks because you gave up 5 goals, but at the same time, you're making these spectacular saves because you've got nothing to lose. So you make these amazing moves or whatever because you're already down, and that's your highlight reel, and you send it to a coach.
Yeah.
And some guys might fall for that. But I also know that they're starting to look at, I'm going to look at this guy's Facebook page and see if he goes on rants about whatever. I literally remember one time looking at, this was with not with JP, but we were scouting a player, and they were looking at a player, and they're like, man, he's got 10 videos where he's just talking about Harry Potter. Like, how's this going to work in the locker room? Is this guy going to be too weird or just or the right kind of weird? We don't know. Because sometimes you want those. We want some kind of, like, character guys, weird guys. Yeah. Characters. There's character guys, and then there's characters. And you want them both.
Yeah. Who's his favorite character? Harry Potter.
Yeah, Harry Potter. Anyway, George, I invite people in that I just want to thank. And I've only known you for a couple years now, and I've just seen you do so much for the area. And I give you crap about not being a Utah guy, but man, you've done more for Utah hockey than a lot of people that are from here. So I want to just thank you for everything you've done on behalf of Utah hockey.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm super honored, but I don't know exactly what to say. I just kind of do my thing, right? And I hope I can keep doing it for a long time to come. And hopefully I could be part of the process in bringing us to a position of prominence in the hockey world right here in Salt Lake.
Yeah, We all hope so. Gary, do you have anything else to add before we wrap up?
No, this has been great. This has been excellent to listen to.
George, thanks again. Anything else you want to throw on? You want to pump one of your teams or throw on a...
No, come on out to Steiner, second half of the season. We're going to have some really good games. Most of the men's M1 schedule is at home for the second half of the season, and it's a really great night. Come on out with the family. Come on down to the rink. They have lots of different promotional nights coming up. They've got some terrific snacks at the snack bar. More than that, it's a great, wholesome family night out at the rink, and you'll be home by 10:30 under the feathers, getting ready to come back for the Saturday night game after the Friday night.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you guys run it like it's a professional team. It's been unreal and fun to watch. I go to some of the games. I send Tegan to the rest of them so that we can get footage and coverage of the games. All University of Utah M1 games are streamed live on KSLSports.com. Just go down. I don't know how to find it. Josh, you have any idea how to find those? Nah, none of us know.
It's there. Just Google it. You'll find it.
Yeah, most people know how to use a computer.
Google.
Yeah, yep. Google it. Yeah. But yeah, or KSL Sports, they're organized on there. Tegan always just pulls it up, and he has a way. We can just watch it on our TV. I know that doesn't blow everybody else's mind, but he just pulls it up on his computer, and then it's on our TV. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. It's well, like, the technology.
Yeah.
The game day production for the U is by far the best in our league, and it's...
You have an Emmy Award winner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, and I don't know exactly what goes on behind the curtain, but I know it's an awful lot, and I know it's professional quality, better than minor league professional quality.
Agreed 100%.
NHL quality.
Wow.
It's honestly... Awesome. And I'm not throwing the Grizzlies under the bus, but it's better than... I just don't think the Grizzlies have the resources,
right.
And... other volunteers and like the University of Utah has just put a lot of money into this, and man, we're really pumping this up, but it's really cool. It really is cool. And I mean, they just have so many cameras, angles, and
I just wish they'd use the skinny lens when they pan on the bench.
Yeah, that camera has a little
stupid camera.
Yeah. But I think Gary and I are going to do some intermission reports on some second half games too.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun.
Let's
we'll be that. Out there.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, right. Guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, George, thanks so much. Gary, thanks for making it in the snowstorm. And
yeah.
We'll be back next week. And that is the Utah Puck Report.